My name is Priscilla Solis Ibarra, and I am from Dallas, Texas. I was born in South Dallas in Oak Cliff, which is now known as the Bishop Arts District, but it's been known longer as Oak Cliff. And I went to undergraduate university here at UNT, and this is where I learned that one could go to graduate school and become a professor. I didn't really understand where professors came from until I was a college student, and then I went to UCLA for my PhD, studied there for 2 years, and transferred over to Rice University in Houston. And my area of study is Chicana, Latinx literature and theory, as well as eco-criticism, environmental humanities. And I look at the intersection between these fields, intersectionality among these fields, to get at recovering some of the contributions of Latinx peoples to our environmental frameworks, ways that we integrate different kinds of practices, ideas, thoughts and beliefs in relationship to the natural environment. And there's some really unique aspects to Latinx culture that I think can make some significant contributions to the way we think about environmental issues today, including fundamentally questioning the concept of environment to begin with. So that's a little bit about me.
And you mentioned growing up in Dallas, and then you came to school here at UNT, but what other connections do you have to Denton?
I guess, you know, my initial relationship with Denton was as an undergraduate student, and I was actually here for 5 years because I was a journalism major for a couple of years before I figured out that I needed to be an English major. And so it just took me a little bit longer to get through undergrad. And then when I left, I thought I was never going to come back, but it was very easy to come back in terms of my family being close by in Dallas. And then when a job came up here, I applied for it and I ended up getting it. So then I came back to Denton in 2010, and I've been here ever since. So it's kind of a long relationship back and forth with UNT starting in 1992 up to today. And it has changed a great deal since then. When I was an undergraduate student, hanging out in Denton on the weekend was not really an option. If students wanted to go out, quote unquote, go out, we would go to Dallas, usually Deep Ellum, which I'm sure still happens, but there weren't really any options for hanging out in Denton, except for Fry Street, but that was just like during the week. So the kind of cultural centers and entertainment centers were far away. In that sense, it was good for studying, right? Hitting the books here.
So, in what sense do you consider Denton to be home?
Yeah, that's a good question. As a college student, I didn't feel that way. I mean, I felt that way. It was very cozy for me as a college student. You know, it was kind of manageable sized town for undergraduate. And I lived off campus. I only lived on campus for 1 year, for my first year. But I was still, you know, I knew I was going to move away eventually, either for graduate school or to get a job somewhere. And then when I came back as an assistant professor, you never know if you're gonna stay somewhere until you get tenure. And that happened about 3 years ago, and that's when I bought my first house here. So it's starting to feel like, oh, okay, this is a place that I'm gonna actually settle down in. Which is strange to think about when, you know, one has had such a long-standing relationship with a place and I'm in my mid-40s. You would think that, you know, by this point I would have felt like, oh, I have deep roots somewhere. Now, the Dallas area definitely feels like home to me because it's where I grew up, is where my family is. And then Texas itself feels like home to me too. My first job was at Texas Tech in West Texas, which is a very different place. It's a very different kind of place from here. But it's still, you know, it's still within Texas. And then graduate school was in Houston, which again is very different from North Texas. But it's still Texas. So I guess if you ask me sort of where I feel most at home, it would be like Texas generally, the Metroplex more specifically, and then Denton is starting to feel like home.
So what are your memories of Denton during the movement to ban fracking?
Yeah, it was that was an interesting time because for me it's the first time that I saw a broader coalition of people in Denton working together, even across conventional political boundaries or conventional sort of interests, stakeholders, in order to make this happen. So it was actually pretty exciting. I was not directly involved in any of the movement, but I was definitely, you know, aware of it, would hear about meetings and, you know, read about it in the paper every now and then and try to stay up to date on what was going on. Like, you know, when they worded what the proposition was going to be, you know, it was kind of confusing that if you voted yes, it meant that you wanted, or it was kind of like the opposite, right? It was the wording was in one direction that actually meant the other thing. And so, but I remember, I distinctly remember that there was a big lead on that. Like everybody was talking about it, so that when you, by the time you went to vote, it was clear to you which, you know, direction you were going to vote for what, even though it seemed like it was confusing to begin with, right? I also remember that there were people walking around gathering signatures in a way to, like, ask you to make a certain commitment to how you were going to vote. And that was also confusing too, because there were people from both sides, you know, for and against the ban. And those who were against the ban, it seemed like they were promoting some very confusing information in those campaigns to gather signatures. So it was just like a lot of stuff was going on all at the same time, but it was very interesting to see Denton kind of gather around a particular issue like this. And it started to seem like, oh, well, even though this is not, you know, a liberal urban center of Texas, like the urban centers in Texas are usually pretty liberal, pretty blue, that there's some potential for this place to maybe embrace some of its potential progressive identity.
Cool. I was wondering if you remember like any specific moments, like maybe like on your way to the grocery store or anything like that, where you were, you encountered like a campaigner who maybe was trying to persuade you to vote one way or another.
Yeah, I remember a couple of different specific encounters. One was mine, and then another was some friends that had an encounter with somebody who was gathering signatures for the other side, to protest, well, against the ban. See, the wording is very confusing. So I was... Where was I? I think I was in the parking lot. I was going to buy food for my dog. So in Razor Ranch, like there's a Petco or something over there. So I was on my way to go buy some dog food, and somebody approached me and they said, "Oh, can I talk to you about the fracking ban?" And I thought, "Oh, cool, great." But then, you know, the more that I looked at what they were asking me to sign, the more it seemed like, oh, this is actually not what I support. This is against the ban. So then I asked them, so what, you know, how come you're gathering these signatures? And it became like, I don't know if it was explicitly communicated to me, but it became clear to me that they were paid to do this. It was not a volunteer thing, because when somebody approaches me in a parking lot or outside of a store or something, gathering a signature, I just assume that they're a volunteer for a particular cause. And then I tend to be kind of open to that conversation. But then if they're asking me to sign something, of course, you know, like our parents teach us, read anything before you sign it. And then I figured out, okay, this is not what I'm interested in. And then another instance was some friends that were hanging out on the square downtown. And it was like my friend and his mom, who was visiting from out of town. And I think they were kind of in a rush. And they signed it. And then they said, "Wait a minute, can I look at that again?" And then they figured out that it wasn't the thing that they wanted to support. And then they asked for their signature back. And it was like this huge confrontation to try to get their signature back. Like the person did not want to erase their signature or whatever. So it was kind of like tense like that too, confrontational at times when this was going on.
Earlier you mentioned a transformation from like a conservative kind of field to, you know, it was transforming. I was wondering like if you could talk a little bit about like what you feel like prompted that, or why did the fracking ban seem to like motivate people, or motivate this transformation?
This is something that we talk about within environmental studies quite a bit, which is like environmental issues have the potential to bring together different stakeholders on an issue-by-issue basis, stakeholders who might conventionally be on opposite sides of the political spectrum, but because there's a specific environmental issue, they can actually see how they would agree on something, right? So, like a rancher and a college professor might actually agree on something like banning fracking if the rancher is concerned about the contamination of the water table in terms of, you know, a water source for their cattle, and the college professor is concerned about the environmental issue, you know, in the abstract, and the contamination of the water source because they have small children or something like that. So I think that's what we kind of saw happening here, which on the one hand makes you think, oh, well, it's just about this specific issue, so it's not really going to fundamentally change the foundation of the city in any way, or, you know, the foundation of politics in Denton and Denton County. Because I think the city of Denton and Denton County are also pretty different. I think Denton County is conservative, but if we look at just the city of Denton, it might be a little more evenly split. I don't think we're quite progressive, but it would be interesting to even know that. I don't know that. And I mean, there's two universities here, right? So we have a ton of students, young people who tend to lean more liberal, and then all the professors, I would think, also tend to lean more liberal. So yeah, I mean, we had this kind of issue that people, different stakeholders could rally around. But I think it has had a lasting impact on politics in Denton. People saw that there was potential to create some change, even if it was around a specific issue, I think that people who were active during the fracking ban movement back then started to see like how city politics worked and how county politics worked, and maybe envisioned themselves as becoming part of that. Partly inspired by not just the campaign, but the success of the campaign.
So what do you remember about Denton the day of the election?
Yes, so I remember it was raining like crazy, and I remember thinking to myself and hearing people, other people say, and talking to other people about the fact that maybe nobody is going to vote, you know, and low voter turnout usually means that the more conservative candidate wins, and in this case it would be, you know, the against the ban would win. So that made us kind of nervous. But it turned out okay, and I remember driving by the Civic Center and seeing that there were people there that were voting, and I can't remember actually if I did early voting or if I voted on that day. I think I might have even voted on that day. But I remember thinking, oh well, there's activity around here, so I think we're gonna be okay.
And months later, when news about, you know, overturning the fracking ban started to be known, what did Denton feel like then?
Well, I would say that first, I would say it was just like an amazing experience to see that the ban had passed, you know, that it was successful. That was really inspiring to see that was possible. And I remember I went to California to speak at this environmental conference. It's called, what is it called? The Geography of Hope. And the theme was women in the land. And they invited all of these writers to, it's a, like a community conference, it's not an academic conference. They invited all these writers to speak on the topic of women's relationship to the land, and they tried to get like a broad spectrum of people from different backgrounds and ways of writing and activists. Like Rebecca Solnit was there, Robert Haas, Kathleen Dean Moore, Camille Dungy, Carolyn Finney, Susan Griffin. I mean, some really amazing people were there. And I remember on the opening night of the conference, Kathy Moore, Bob Haas, and I were on the panel. And we did everything as a panel discussion so that nobody would just sit there and read a paper. We wanted it to be really engaging. So they didn't give us any kind of like, they just gave us a set of questions that they were eventually going to ask us, and they put us on different panels across the conference. And then there was just a moderator, and then we would field these questions, and it was really effective. We all were telling stories, we weren't reading papers. And I remember one of the things that I said that night was, because we were speaking to the idea of hope, and I said something like, I'm really inspired by the fact that in my little town in Texas, we were able to pass a ban on fracking. And, you know, all of the 250 people who were there just erupted in applause and cheering about that. And I just felt so great being able to go to California from Texas, you know, from my home state, from my little town, and talk about this inspiring success. And then we hear about the backlash, right? And it's a powerful backlash. It's powerful. That's at the state level. It doesn't just push back on this particular ban, but on any potential municipal ban statewide ever. So it's like, oh, okay, I see. If we get together and organize on this local municipal level, there's only the impression of success, because what you do is you draw attention to your power, and the greater powers are going to eliminate the possibility for any small-scale grassroots movement like this ever again. So then you start to ask yourself, is it really worth it to do any kind of grassroots organizing if this is the response? Is it worth it doing grassroots organizing that's within the system? You know, this being municipal codes that eventually slam up against state law. Is that even like a worthwhile thing to try to do? Because it seems like the entities in power, government, that is very motivated by its alliance with private interests, private corporations that are profiting from fracking. Like, their attention is going to be raised, and then any kind of municipal election or ban is not possible about anything, right? Not just about fracking. So that tends to be kind of discouraging, right? But there was a contingent in Denton, and again, I wasn't at these meetings, but I heard about the city council meetings where the fracking movement split, and there were those who were advocating for the city to sue the state over this ban on bans. And there was, of course, hesitance to get the city involved in a major litigation like that. Would be very expensive. But I tended to agree with that side, and strategically, like pragmatically, started thinking, well, there must be other cities who are interested in participating in their own fracking ban movement. We're anticipating doing that, saw what Denton did, and maybe they could work together with us. Like, it wouldn't be Denton alone suing the state, but getting together a coalition of other municipalities that were willing to say, okay, we're going to sue the state over the fact that we think we have a right as municipalities to create bans within our city limits, right? But that didn't happen. That's not what won the day in that debate within the fracking movement or at the city council. But there are two city council members right now who I think were inspired by what was going on then, as well as the election of Trump. So inspired in different ways to run for city council and get on the city council to start working on these issues. One I'm pretty sure of, I'm not sure about the other one, but it became really clear that something like a decision about whether or not Denton was going to sue the state, it ultimately ends up in the hands of the city council, and if there's a preponderance of progressive city council members, then that could have been possible. But with the constitution of the city council at that time, it was pretty clear that was not going to be possible, even if the fracking movement had agreed that that's the direction that they wanted to take and recommend to the city. But I think that wasn't even a consensus within the fracking movement, or, you know, anti-fracking movement, to then recommend that clearly to the city council, to then the city council make this decision. So, but with all of that being said, I still think it's an incredibly inspiring movement, incredibly successful movement, because it showed this is possible. It showed what kind of fear it instilled in the state and in the private interests. And it inspired specific people to become more involved in local city government. You know, two specific council members that I know of, or that I think I know of, right? Like, I haven't directly asked this question, but it just seems to me like there's some kind of a causality there. And countless other people that I don't know of, that I don't know about, that are are still probably very involved.
So I noticed that you had taught a class where you had your students also conduct oral histories of the fracking movement. And I was wondering what motivated that for you to have your students investigate this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that class I think was maybe at least 2 years, if not more, after. And I think the first thing that, and it was a class on environmental literature. So, you know, it was pretty directly related. But I think I had heard that the anti-fracking movement was donating its materials, its documentation to the library, to the Special Collections Library. I think I heard that. I'm not sure. I couldn't be making that up. But, I think I heard that, and then I thought, oh, wouldn't it be nice to have oral histories to go along with that? And I remember I talked to Todd Moy, and I said, you know, I'd never done anything like that before, so I had asked my undergraduate students in my Chicano literature class to do oral histories with family members, but I'd never had like a sort of political movement documentation kind of thing, so I talked to him about it and got some advice about how to structure it. And yeah, I mean, you know, they had an amazing time meeting some of these folks. I think some of them were really moved by their conversations with some of the activists that were involved in this. And one student went out of his way to interview someone who was against the fracking ban. Because he, and you know, you always get these students, and it's really great to have them in class because they're always kind of trying to make the devil's advocate argument or undermine the dominant strain that it seems like the class is moving towards. And I really like that kind of, you know, debate to exist within a class. So he said, oh yeah, it seems pretty clear that everybody's going to interview people who are part of the movement. I want to make sure that I document the voice of someone who like works in the fracking industry. And it was actually kind of hard for him to find somebody who was willing to talk to him about it, even though he was like, I'm not going to try to, you know, make them out to be a villain. I really want to hear about their side of the story. So he was able to do that. And then they all gave like presentations in class about the person that they interviewed and played a little clip.
Were most of your students from Denton, or was this the first that they had learned about this movement?
All of the students in that class were either juniors or seniors, so they had been around, and some of them knew about it, some of them didn't know very much about it, so this was their opportunity to, you know, to learn more about it. Some of them were pretty excited about the assignment because they had, you know, been around at that time and were involved or inspired by it. So yeah, they had kind of an opportunity to, you know, have at least some kind of a familiarity with it.
So how has this this experience and kind of witnessing that, how has that shaped your perspectives of Denton or city politics?
Yeah, you know, Denton, as I said at the beginning, Denton has changed so much since the early 90s when I first lived here. It's grown a great deal. You know, the arrival of fracking and this whole response to it has really kind of, you know, gathered a different sort of community. In 2016, when Trump was elected, I think kind of the seeds that still existed of the anti-fracking movement sort of came together to form groups like Indivisible Denton to get people to run for city office, for statewide office. First women's march that happened on the square around the courthouse lawn in Denton after Trump's election. So what would that be? January 2017. It was inspiring because there were a lot of people there, but it was also a little bit disorienting because it was just a lot of people walking around in a circle, holding up signs, and maybe a few chants here and there, but there were no speakers. It was a very kind of ad hoc sort of feeling, and that was okay. It was really okay because people just wanted to be around each other and show, and literally demonstrate that we were against what had happened in this election, that there were people who fundamentally disagree with the outcome of that election. But it was also a little bit like, wow, it seemed like somebody might have put something together, some kind of a program here, and there wasn't any. But then there was another march the following year, and it was super organized. There was a whole slate of speakers. They were chants organized, and that doesn't seem like it would make that big of a difference, but the speakers were not just, oh, let's talk about, the current political issues, but they were speaking as people who were running for office. So it seemed like, oh, okay, all of this energy that seemed like we walked around in circles around the courthouse square last year, and that all that energy seemed to be dissipating into the air. At least some of those people got together and said, okay, who's gonna do something, right? And a person who runs for office isn't alone. I mean, they have a whole network of people that's helping them, right? So it's like, oh, okay, so that's exciting. People are really getting organized here, and that's inspiring. So that's a really big change, and I think that the anti-fracking movement did not play a small role in that. The fact that that happened prior to Trump's being elected, I think, was significant for this particular place. There were already some networks in place. People recognized each other. People already had ongoing conversations. They just had to reestablish those connections to start to, move it to another level and start running people for city council and for local offices. So that it's not, it was for a really long time in Denton, you would go vote and it would just be Republicans on the ballot. Okay, I guess, all these people are just running unopposed. At least they're running opposed now, which means that eventually some of them are gonna win. So yeah, I think it has had.
So if I understood correctly, it's kind of like the fracking movement has this lasting effect up until today.
Yes. Yeah, and even if it didn't ultimately succeed in its very specific goal, the action of grassroots organizing is not wasted, even if the specific outcome is not achieved, because those networks are established and those networks can be activated for future movements, and those relationships are established among people, and that changes people's lives in important ways, in which they get to know people that they might not otherwise have known, again, like I said before, they're different stakeholders, right? So who they might not have agreed with politically in the past, they can see that, oh, well, even if we disagree about these two major things, there's this third and fourth things that we can agree on, and let's work together on those kinds of things. And just the potential for that emerges from those connections is very unpredictable. And the act itself of taking those risks to establish those connections with unknown people, I think is all very positive energy for a place, right? It's not just everybody moving along the same little ruts in the city, which I think was the way that things worked for a really long time here. But people were willing to jump out of their ruts and establish new pathways. And that effort and that energy is never wasted. Maria Luanes talks about that as, you know, having ongoing impacts. That even if you're not successful in your specific goal, there's those connections are very important.
I remember earlier you had said something about how the overturning of the ban seems to kind of discourage grassroots, but it seems from what you're saying.
Right, so I was saying all of that leading up to this analysis, right? Like it would seem like that would that would be the effect. And that's certainly what the legislation, the ban on bans, is meant to communicate, right? Like, oh, you're gonna show me you can do that one little thing, you little town, let me show you. We're gonna ban bans, you know? That's so overwhelming. It's really overwhelming, you know? But you can't ban the energy that goes into establishing the networks that makes something like that happen. It's going to have an impact, even if not on that specific thing. It's going to have an impact. And I don't know, maybe in another 5 or 10 years, there's going to be enough people on the city council that would be willing to draw up some kind of a legal action against the state of Texas in alliance with other municipalities that want to challenge the state law banning bans. I can envision that that could happen here or in some other city.
So I was wondering if there was anything you'd like to bring up that I haven't asked or
yeah.
You have a question.
No, I can't think of anything.
Well, thank you for your time. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, no, thank you.